Public health measures taken to slow the spread of the novel coronavirus have already had a big impact on the national and global economy. The latest numbers from the government show unemployment claims for the week ending on March 21st reached 3.3 million, a record high. Many businesses remain closed, and the global trade market is also taking a hit. The government is hoping to offset some of those problems with its latest stimulus bill, which puts $500 billion toward boosting affected industries and sends out direct checks of $1,200 to many Americans. Those are slated to come out in the next several weeks. To check up on the economy and the federal response, we're joined by Menzi Chin. He's a professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison. Menzi, welcome back to Central Time.
Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
The economic impact of this coronavirus is starting to take shape. Many of us might know someone who's lost a job or a business that's closed. Can you put the current situation into context for us? How serious is this for the economy?
Well, I think in terms of just the drop-off in economic activity and the pace at which the drop-off has occurred, this is unprecedented. It certainly has been much more rapid than what occurred during the last Great Recession, as we called it. So much more rapid, not really anything that warned you in terms of economic activity that something was coming. In addition, the sort of new unemployment insurance claims that occurred that were released last week for the previous week, well, that was unprecedented. There has never been a spike like that, and it's likely that the report that comes out this week will be even larger. But I will point out, you know, this is in some ways the thing that you want to happen. When you have an epidemic, you want to, in some ways, you don't want to reduce economic activity, but you want to reduce the things that are surrounding economic activity so that you don't have further propagation of the virus, or at least you slow down the propagation of the virus.
President Trump has said he wants to ease some of the social distancing guidelines and open up the economy. Others say for the sake of public health, as you just pointed out, things need to stay closed down for longer. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell addressed that in an interview last Thursday. Here's a listen.
I think the sooner we get the spread of the virus under control, people will regain confidence. When they become confident that is the case, then they will very willingly open their businesses up, go back to work. The consumer will be spending. So I think the first order of business will be to get the spread of the virus under control and then resume economic activity.
How are you looking at that back and forth between the economy and public health?
Well, I think the weight of evidence and expert advice is certainly on Chairman Powell's position. I think there's a false choice that's being put out there, as if you could reopen the economy quickly and restart economic activity without having the virus burst out and perhaps infect many, many more people, so that the longer-term impact on the economy is actually more negative. So we have that result from a series of simulations of various models that have to combine both epidemic-related research and economic research. And in addition, there's been recently a working paper that's been distributed. It's got lots of attention, which points out that in the 1918 flu, what happened was that the cities and states that implemented more vigorously and earlier these measures to prevent transmission of the virus actually, in the end, recovered better and had higher output over the longer term. So I think, you know, it's clearly a mistake to say, oh, we can just, you know, let people resume operations and nothing else will happen. The pace at which the virus infects people and then the resulting strain on the medical infrastructure, that is a function of what you do with respect to, you know, measures to prevent the mitigation of the spread.
You referenced the unemployment numbers, which the numbers seem quite, well, they're staggering. It's the highest number since records started being kept in 1967. Who's being hit the hardest?
Well, I think it's hard to say who exactly. I mean, essentially, first of all, anybody who's in office where you want to do the social distancing and working from home, but you can't, they're going to be impacted. Manufacturing enterprises are closed down to a certain extent. So there are essential services that have to keep on going, or at least services and activities that have been deemed essential. So they're not being hit right away. But there's a lot of voluntary shutdowns of operations. Then that was the first round. What's going to happen over time is that people are not going to be consuming as much. For sure, services have been hard hit, you know, restaurants and so forth. So they are the first line. But over time, people are going to have less income despite the measures undertaken by the government. And what's going to happen then is consumption will decline. And if there's no demand for goods, then once again, you'll have more people losing their jobs.
We're talking with Menzi Qian, Professor of Public Affairs and Economics at UW-Madison, about the economic impact of the coronavirus. Those unemployment numbers, do they include people in the so-called gig economy, freelancers, artists, those kind of workers?
Well, now, I don't believe that they do. So on this count, I'm not sure. What I do know is that the bill that was passed should, in principle, address their concerns. That is, typically we can funnel money to people who are unemployed via the unemployment insurance system. Traditionally, gig workers have not been in that unemployment insurance system, but we're supposed to put into place some way of funneling income or resources to those workers. So the bill that was passed last week, that takes into account the fact that there are many people who are not covered by the unemployment insurance system as it is now. In addition, you know, we've extended beyond the usual time the amount of time that's covered, as well as the amount of funds that are given out. Whether that's going to be sufficient to offset all the negative impacts that we're seeing from this pandemic, that's unclear.
Individual checks for that as part of that package that was passed by Congress, $1,200 for people making less than $75,000 a year, given that this new reality could last for at least a few more months. How much is that really going to help?
Well, that's the short term, and I think we're feeling our way through in terms of what's going to have to happen over the longer term. You're right. $1,200 per person, $2,400 for a married couple. And then you've got the $500 per child. And by the way, that phases out after a certain income level. So it's unclear if that's anything more than a small buffer. But combined with the unemployment insurance, we're on our way to something that's going to help for a while. Could we do better? I'm sure we could have done better in this bill. There are things that are not covered. For instance, food stamps weren't enhanced. But that just means that we're going to have to likely do more in the coming months to make sure the economy just doesn't completely fall off a cliff. But let me remind you, I mean, in some ways, we can't restart economic activity, can't start making things and so forth, just resuming business as normal. That's not a choice. If we try to do that at a point that's too early, before we've got things sort of stabilized and we have a means of tracking the infections in the economy, then we'll just be in a worse situation some months down the line.
We're picking up our talk with Menzi Qian, Professor of Public Affairs and Economics at UW-Madison, taking a look at the economic impact of COVID-19. And we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Have you already felt the financial impact of this pandemic? Do you think the government is doing a good job of responding to it? What else would you like to see happen? Have a question for Menzi Qian about how this is affecting the national and international economy? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send an email. The address is ideas@wpr.org. We've talked about some of the impacts here in the United States and unemployment and so forth. What about the international economy? What's happening there?
Well, we have sort of a ruling version of what's happening in the U.S. So in many countries, particularly in Europe, they're already hard hit. Obviously, we've all heard about the dire straits that Italy's in. And we expect to see increases in cases and so forth in the rest of Europe. What's interesting is that in parts of Asia, they managed to get things under control through implementation of stringent measures, social distancing, lockdowns, and so forth, pretty early on. On the other hand, we've had instances where then those measures were relaxed, perhaps too early, and then you've had a resurgence. So Hong Kong is an instance where we thought, you know, they'd succeeded pretty much in controlling the epidemic. They eased up, and then now they have, once again, a problem. That just gives light to this issue about you don't want to sort of relax the constraints too early. Well, one of the impacts is that now we're going to have likely a worldwide recession, and that means that there'll be less demand for the things we make. And as a consequence, that's another hit to the U.S. economy. Even after the immediate effects of the pandemic dissipate, let's say, then what's true is demand is going to be reduced, and that's going to hurt our export industries.
Let's take a call. We have Michelle joining us from McFarland. Michelle, welcome to Central Time.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I currently work three jobs. My full-time job is in the healthcare insurance, and it barely pays my other bills, miscellaneous bills, you know, electricity and tuition and so on. So that's why I chose to work the two or three jobs in the service industry as a bartender and in catering. Those two jobs, I make more than my first job. So now I've lost those two jobs, but I can't file unemployment, and I get that $1,200 check plus the $500. There's like nothing out for people like me to get that extra income or get anything in. So I'm stuck with the $1,200.
And Menzie, what about Michelle's situation? A lot of people in that same spot.
Well, I'm feel really bad about the situation that people are in that are similar to this situation here. I guess all I can say at the moment is that what this highlights is the problems systemically that occurred in the U.S. economy. In general, you would probably want people to be able to sustain themselves on one job that was full-time and paid sufficiently. But for a long time, what's been true is that too many people have had to rely on cobbling together a number of jobs because the salaries and wages weren't sufficient. And it's also the case that, for instance, the healthcare system in the U.S., it seemed like it was operating to a certain extent until the crisis hit, and then you see the shortcomings, the fact that many people are not covered. So it's not clear to me that there's a way within the current system to address these concerns directly, but it does highlight the fact that if we want to make the system more resilient over time, then these are issues that have to be addressed. That is, how do you get the income distribution to be better, more equally weighted so that people can sustain themselves without having to do a multiplicity of jobs, including jobs that are not covered by any sort of unemployment insurance or any sort of backstop.
The people may have noticed that gasoline prices are lower than we thought we'd ever see them again. What's going on here? Is this pandemic related, or are there other things at play here?
I think the way to think about it is there was a sort of in the background weakening demand for oil. But what happened is that with the shutdown in China, remember China was the first to implement a sort of almost nationwide lockdown, certainly a complete lockdown in Hubei province. What happened is that if you're not making things, then you don't need as much oil to power things and to transport things. China is a big marginal demander of oil on international markets. Take China offline, then it's supply and demand with what we call inelastic supply and demand curves. That is, they're pretty steep. So you have a big drop in the price of oil. And that feeds pretty quickly into a drop in the price of gasoline. So, yes, that's really the proximate cause is the pandemic. And that's good news for American consumers to the extent that we're actually consuming gasoline. On the other hand, it's bad news for parts of the U.S. where we are producing oil at the moment.
And the losses we're seeing in the economy now tied to the COVID-19 pandemic, when this eventually passes, does that mean it's going to be easier for the economy to bounce back?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of pent-up demand. People will want to get out. They'll want, you know, after being cooped up, they'll want to spend once there's a resolution to the uncertainty about where the economy is going. On the other hand, you know, the people's savings are going to be depleted. People will have built up debt. And, you know, there's going to be a whole bunch of relationships that were destroyed, you know, business to business, business to customer relationships that disappeared during this crisis, depending upon how long the crisis continues. So to me, it's not likely that we're going to be back to normal in terms of economic activity really soon. There'll be some bounce back when, depends upon how this crisis is managed, both in the public health and economic domains, but I don't anticipate we'll be quickly back at where we were before the epidemic.
Well, we all know that in order to buy things, people have to have money, and in order to have money, they have to have jobs. So, is this a chicken and egg kind of situation then?
To some extent, and that's why we have to. I mean, we're stuck in a quandary, and so who can step in? It's the federal government. You know, there's always a likening of people to governments. You know, if times are tough, tighten your belt. But there's one difference between you and me and the federal government, and that is the federal government can essentially borrow at close to zero interest rates, whereas you and I, well, we can't.
And I can't borrow whenever I want. But thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. Menzie Chin, for joining us. He's a professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison. He joined us for a look at the impact of COVID-19 on the economy and what the government is doing to offset it.